We are back with the season 6 of the SaaS Sessions podcast. If you are tuning in for the first time, I'd like to personally welcome you to a listener base of over 60,000 people. Yes, that's right. We recently crossed 16,000 listeners for the show, and it couldn't have happened without support from all of you. This episode with Kaus was recorded back in 2021. So without further ado, let's dive into that episode now.
So coming into our today's guest, Kaus Manjitha. Kaus was on the season 4 of the SaaS Sessions podcast this year. In that episode, we talked about her company, Kubrick, an AI-driven automation tool for designers and marketers. Kubrick was recently pivoted to Mason. And, you know, let's learn more about the pivot and about Mason in this episode. So, hey, Kaus, it's such a great pleasure to welcome you once again on the podcast.
Always happy to talk to you again. Really great conversations and always deep diving into interesting anecdotes. So happy to be here.
Same here. I mean, last time I learned a lot and you know, hoping to learn some more in this episode as well. So a lot of listeners who would have heard the first episode with you already know about you and Kubrick, but would you be just, can you give a little more intro about you and your journey into SaaS and now Mason?
Yeah, absolutely. I think very quickly, been a product maker in some way or the other for a while. And I think it's a lifelong product maker, I would say, because I had done a bunch of product management work across large companies like IBM Labs to NCR Corporation globally, been abroad for that, and then back in India, more specifically at Paytm in the early days, and then at Myntra, where I met my co-founder, who had a startup that was acquired by the Flipkart Group, and ended up, both of us ended up working together at Myntra, where we built out some of the content and monetization platforms and products, onboarding the entire marketplace vendors into a content-first, experience-first mode at back at Myntra. And then stepped out, decided let's get into building products, not just for a company, but for everybody. I think that's how space in itself, we kind of jumped into, ended up at, because we were always building products that was for prosumers in some way, for people who are not necessarily hobbyist, but who are more doing something seriously in the line of their revenue and their, you know, business, right? Growing into business. So we always were SaaS first, even during work, when we were working with other companies. It was never only for consumers. It was always for prosumers. So something to do with tools and solutions that helps you, in a way, earn better end of the day. So we ended up at SaaS, where initially we had another startup that was more around enabling enterprise SaaS. That was Kubrick. That's where we met. And the focus again was more on how do you enable large companies automate a lot of their marketing and experience, you know, operations. Right. And while doing that, I had met you. I had a lot of great conversations, had a lot of interesting customers. We worked with Flipkart. We worked with Amazon for their Great India Sale. We worked with, you know, Myntra, Dunzo, Swiggy, and a lot of learnings. But as we continued to work, we sort of started realizing that experience, how do I better give better experiences to my consumers, right? To my shoppers, to my customers. And by giving a consistent experience, how do I earn better as a business? That problem is not just an enterprise problem. I think that's a bigger problem for the young consumers, for the young prosumers rather. If I am a brand creator and I'm just starting out, right? It's an even bigger problem for me. How do I consistently give the right experience to my shoppers so that they don't drop off, right? So we pivoted. We realized that we like enterprise SaaS, but we want to create a democratic, you know, product that can enable not just one enterprise to succeed, but that can create many, many enterprises eventually. So that's where Mason was born.
Interesting journey. And, you know, I think in the last episode, we also discussed about, you know, you having a comfortable job at Mint and then, you know, leaving that comfort to start your own company, which was Kubrick. Then, you know, getting a little more uncomfortable, which is like a pivot from Kubrick to Mason. So, you know, just double clicking on the pivot point, right? Like, how was the decision taken and, you know, what sort of challenges did you face and, you know, what was the tipping point that eventually, you know, made the decision of the pivot?
Yeah, I think that's a very good question because it's a hard question to pivot always. Recently, I read a write-up newsletter from Hiten Shah, right? And he and his co-founder have recently also pivoted from whatever they were building to Nira, I think now.
Right.
And when I read that, you know, Sunil, I realized how we could have communicated our pivot better. It was a big learning on how to really articulate your internal shifts to the external world. But that's like what I learned recently. But going back to the pivot, of course, it was a decision that didn't happen overnight. I think somehow both of us knew that we do want to be more democratic. We thrive on enabling a lot of people be more successful through technology. I think philosophically, both of us just align on that, right? How do we enable everybody to use technology better and to succeed better? So for us, you know, that decision somewhere was probably already made, just that the implementation of the decision took a little bit of discussions, took a little bit of confidence, I would say. It took a little bit of, you know, that conviction that, yes, it's okay. Yeah, because that other business, it was a business. I mean, we were earning. We are earning out of it. You have customers, or enterprise customers are paying you, right? So it's not that, you know, it's a business that you can put in better structures, make it scale. But somewhere there was always this, hey, like, it's, yeah, it'll scale, but, you know, how do we love to scale? Right. And that came back to, hey, we see a bigger problem where everybody, if they get a better access, especially in e-commerce, we love that world. So as brand makers, if they get more access to better technology, to easier technology being the pivot, that, hey, they will be able to succeed better. So it was initially, the first starting point was speaking to about 2000 odd global brands through the Shopify network, through phone calls, through, you know, almost talking brand owners globally, mostly, you know, building that conviction between the both of us. The step two of it was building the conviction and building, you know, early base of who we knew would use something that we build. The second was now communicating it internally to our team to explain to them, right? Hey, like, this is what we are hearing. These are some people. This is the bigger space that we can operate in. So I believe it. Do you guys believe it? You know, helping them come to the same conviction point and then pivoting. The third was, of course, our partners in a way, right? Our, you know, investors, our angels, our advisors, our mentors, and then conveying the conviction to them. Yeah, so it was that three-stage process in retrospect. But at that point, I don't think I had a framework in mind. We just, you know, spoke to people, we decided, we spoke internally. Now that I come to think of it, this was the process that we followed.
Interesting. And then, you know, just double clicking on the third aspect that you mentioned, right, especially convincing or, you know, communicating into the investors, angels, advisors, right? Like, what sort of support did they provide you, or, you know, what sort of help, you know, they provided you to, you know, make this pivot a successful one?
Yeah, I think I have no complaints in terms of that. I have a complaint with how we communicated, which I kind of alluded to when we started this conversation around the pivot, is that looking at how Hiten and his co-founder have really articulated the gaps and the way that they reach those gaps. And it is not a one-time newsletter. They have been writing about it step by step as they were uncovering, you know, the gaps in their older product, what they realized cannot scale, why they realized they cannot scale it, more importantly, right? And then how the new problem, or newer version of the problem, I would say, was going to help not even them as founders, because they can do it better. And more importantly, why it would help the economy and the whole, you know, space better, right? The world of internet, how it will add more value there. So I think looking back in that, we could have done it in a much more structured and better way. For us, it was a lot of non-structured communication, right? So it was phone calls and meetings and explaining that this is what we're learning as we are learning and on the go, right? And honestly speaking, there was nothing negative from their side, but in retrospect, I have mentioned it to them. several times, especially investors, I could have done better in terms of the framework and the structure that I used to convey this process of decision making to you. Because no matter how much you communicate at, you know, they don't know whether that ad hoc communication is a decision or whether it's just a communication.
Right. Makes sense.
Yeah.
Right. Right. And you know, that's really interesting. And you did mention about ease of building, right? Or ease of using technology, right? And that makes me think about how Kubrick and Mason is tapping onto the no code wave, right? But when we see no code, there are very few companies in India, at least that I personally know of in SaaS, that are, you know, tapping onto this wave. So how do you see this no code ecosystem in India is being built or is being, you know, evolved?
Yeah, I think it's not just about, you know, India versus global, right? Like when you are operating in a problem space or in an industry where you are not selling to developers, let's say, right? Or you are not doing heavy top-down kind of sales where, you know, you can who you're selling to can easily pull in and get bandwidth from their developers and their entry into their roadmap and sprint cycles, right? So when you are selling into an ecosystem that is not necessarily extremely tech savvy, right? Going low or no code becomes imperative because then it reduces the time to, you know, them seeing ROI, right? If it needs even a web developer to put in a piece of little code in my website and you are, again, people are aware about it, but you're adding a little bit of friction, right? Is there somewhere where it's almost as simple as I connected my Google account and I'm good to go, right? Can I see ROI? At least the starting. And then maybe I do need to pull in someone to do some low code work, but at least the first ROI, can I see it instantly? For us, that was the, you know, observation that the global retail space, there are a lot of folks who are coming online and starting to set up their stores online, and they are not necessarily, they don't have access to web developers, right? They don't have access to large operations teams, right? So I think like in the Indian ecosystem, it's more a question. It's not about whether they're going no code or not, whether SaaS products are going no code or not. It's about who are they solving the problem for, right? So if there is, you know, a Shruti's team wingman, they're solving it for, you know, sales operators, right? They don't necessarily have to worry about code or no code in that, you know, perspective, because they have to make sure that every sales rep can leverage wingman. Right. So in a way, they are no code also, just that they don't have to convey it in that way because it's not, the user base does not care whether it's no code or not. Right. Whereas in the retail sector, you know, because you are coming e-commerce and you are saying I'm selling online and I'm built on top of Shopify, you know, so you're already in a perspective where we're using some technology. Now Mason helps you do XYZ on top of Shopify. So there the question happens is like, do I have to code that? Do I have to, you know, learn how to integrate? And there answers like no code come into the picture.
Got it. Makes sense. And you know, just talking more about this no code for e-commerce, right? Like, and there is like Webflow and you know, Shopify in itself is yeah, sort of a no code, right? Like if you don't want to get into too much advanced versions or, you know, do too many advanced customizations of the site, it's no code, right? Like you just choose a theme and this like drag and drop. And I'm sure that there are a lot of drag and drop builders on top of Shopify as well that have come up, right? So what, like, how do you think that is affecting the e-commerce industry? As it, like, it's in the future, it's moving towards no code, or, you know, it's still low code, or people, if they just want to get started, they can get started with no code. And then for, you know, to do advance or, you know, to build something big or to get into, you know, further levels, right? Like, do they still require to code in a way?
Yeah, I think that's a great question because that is where the gap in the industry is, right? Like all these platforms that enable them to set up their store. So even when in e-commerce, there are three phases, right? One is that you have, you know, set up an online store, which is my website builder, you know, which is like creating my inventory being in an Excel sheet or uploaded into an inventory manager, right? My product catalog, all of that. So there is the setup. And that, okay, now I have a store and I have some backend, right? Then the second phase is I have to run that e-commerce store every day, right? Which is basically on one side, I have to get customers from other channels. On the other side, as the customers are coming, my inventory is changing. You know, as customers are interacting and buying with my products, the best sellers and the top sellers, they are evolving, right? As events are happening, I'm having to run sales. So my discounts and my pricing is changing, right? So when your backend, your business metrics and your business data has to change, or your customer data has to change, then your, you know, it has impact on your store. That is still not, it's pretty hard to do that, because for a small team, it's a lot of operations. For larger teams, it's like using headless technologies, which needs a lot, you know, developer first approach, right? So if you have to think of it, it's like coming online is easy, but running my business successfully online is still extremely heavy operationally. There are platforms that enable me to run that operations of maintaining my store to be fresh with my business data, but that is very heavy technology because it's headless commerce and all of that, right? So can there be a more proliferation of apps and products that are low code and no code that enable me to run my business without having to think that I'm implementing a headless commerce stack? Right. So that's where, for example, products like, you know, Yotpo, which helps you end to end manage all your customer reviews. You can do that in a large headless commerce stack, but Yotpo makes it so easy. Customer reviews are so important. You know that, right? And managing them across the store, across Amazon, across Instagram, you might be getting reviews. You want to collate them. You want to, you know, display them. So many things. Yotpo makes it easy for you to do that. Similarly, like, you know, apps like Mason, they make it easy for you to run your, you know, inventory pricing callouts or run your marketing ops within the app, right? In-store marketing. Yeah, so there'll be more and more, I'm hoping, apps and products that sort of break down the complex headless commerce stacks into simple apps that are usable.
Got it. And you know, just curious to know, like, would you be just focusing on, because I am sure that these solutions can be applicable to many different problems in other industries as well. So would you be like willing to, would you be just double down focusing on e-commerce only, or in future, do you also plan to, like, you know, expand it to some different industries as well for solving the same or maybe similar, you know, problem statements?
I think it's, again, a great question. That's why I love coming on your podcast and speaking to you. But yeah, you are right, right? Like running your business day to day, keeping your business data and your experience in sync, it's a multi-industry problem. Even as a SaaS business, we want to make sure that our pricing experiments and our experience in the app and in our website on the pricing pages are all coherent. Right now, what happens? You change your pricing, your app gets updated. You have to make sure that it's also getting updated on the website. If there is a help documentation, you have to make sure that is updated, right? So there is definitely, you know, space for disconnectedness, which helps you run a headless kind of a content experience across, you know, systems. It's definitely applicable to other industries too. Right now, our approach is let's be in the line of commerce. So wherever people are trying to sell physical or, you know, digital goods, that's where we are, which is essentially your ebooks or your all your retail, you know, that sort of is the sector that our focus is. But yeah, hopefully over the next 3 years, you know, Mason expands into enabling not just digital physical goods, but also software, SaaS goods and services and maybe even creator, you know, goods like your videos and all of that to help that keep that shopping experience and that checkout experience in sync.
Great. And, you know, interesting to see. But, you know, just talking one more thing about, you know, Mason's, what's upcoming at Mason, right? Before we move on to the last section of the episode, which is lightning round. What's in store for, like, what's your objective for, let's say, the next year, right? 2022, what's, you know, just COVID getting away and, you know, things starting to get back to normal. And so what's the objective that you have for the upcoming year? And what sort of impacts do you see that Mason would make on the e-commerce industry with the help of no-code technology the next year?
Yeah, so I think we already have, you know, helped, I think, over this last 1 year of experiments in being in stealth and launching out of stealth into beta now. One of the goals of 2021 is to actually launch out of beta, closed beta, and directly into GA. And so our Product Hunt launch is coming up. Show some love, Sunil, when that happens. And for also sure. to the listener community, would love your help on when we are there on Product Hunt end of October, and help us spread the word and get up votes. But one of the goals this year is that, how do we get out of beta into public, into everyone, into the hands of everybody, whether they are on a closed ecosystem like Shopify or not. And so that's how we want to end up 2021. And which means that, we have already helped about 40,000, global stores over this last year's merchants and e-commerce merchants and brand makers, run their store on autopilot in a way over this last year. And 2020, and as we get out into open, we want to definitely help the next 100K, stores and brand makers actually run their store successfully, not just come online, but actually grow online successfully.
Makes sense. And I guess that means that you will have a lot of open positions for next year as well. So listeners, feel free to reach out to Kaus and, check out the Mason's website for, upcoming roles. And that could, if you feel that this is an interesting problem to solve, and, join the team. Absolutely. So coming on to the last section of the episode, where I try not to put the guests on the spot, which is lightning round. So I have three different questions, since you've already been on the show once, than the ones that we discussed last time. Cool. So what if you could personally invest in a SaaS company, right? Which one would you pick and why?
Good question. I would actually invest in no code products, but I would probably invest in a community product. I really see the power of communities. I really see the power of content. I really see the power of, people coming together online to help each other, to, grow each other. And one way is through products, through apps that you use, of course, through solutions that you use, but the other is people that you can interact with, that you can collaborate with and coordinate with. So I think any sort of community SaaS, products that grow to help communities, I'm in for that.
And do you have any product in mind, or it's just just community products?
A couple of products I have in mind. I'm not going to talk about that, but I'll give an example of a product that did pretty, it was interesting. They started out, it was called Kapish, and they started out as a community for, just understanding what different SaaS products, you've used Kapish, and it's the power of being a community product now that they instantly got acquired and they experimented with interesting things. I think as an early product, it was an interesting, a place that they were at, where they were focusing on SaaS and productivity products, right? And they were helping also create a more 360 degree approach to that, where it was not just a Quora kind of a format, but also your FM and all of that coming together. So that is an example
Got it. Second one. So what is that one tool or platform an app that you use daily and cannot live without?
That's a good question. Notion and Airtable right now, to be honest. So nothing very interesting. No very interesting answer over here. Standard, but I think these are two are definitely helping out a lot in just running, the team, growing the team and running our business. My two would say Retool. They use Retool a lot. Yeah.
Awesome. I think Kevin White, who was the head of growth at Retool, was on the show as well last season.
Amazing.
great. So the last one, right, for this episode. So who is someone that's, constantly inspiring you, and why do you think so?
Yeah, it's hard to pin down one person, honestly, in today's world, because there's just too many amazing people, to be honest. I would say right now at the moment, it's just, I'm engaging a lot with the no code community, as I mentioned, right? And just people who are building in the open, everybody. And they are really inspiring me a lot, to even in terms of the way they approach problems, the way they're transparent about what they're building, the way they leverage so many new products or old products out there to build a successful and meaningful solution for their consumers and their users, right? I think all of these folks who are building in the open, who are empowering not just themselves and their team, but the others, right, to watch live how they go through problems, how they evolve out of problems, how they pivot, not pivot. I think that's very, very inspiring. So I would say like that whole hashtag on Twitter is essentially a extremely inspirational thing for me right now.
Awesome. So yeah, I think we have reached the course for this episode. So thanks a lot once again, course, for coming on and, you know, taking time to share your amazing thoughts on Mason and the pivot and the focus on e-commerce and no code specifically, and, you know, answering those lightning questions while being put on the spot. So any parting piece of advice that you want to give to the listener, especially, you know, on the pivot point?
I think it's, as I was telling you, I think the thread was constant since the beginning of the conversation. It's about being able to be not like, you know, building is one thing, but also communicating, being able to pull people together on the same page at the right time. And the thread continued with when I mentioned that, hey, community apps and products are very interesting for me. And when you asked who inspires, I'm like, it's literally a hashtag out there about people who are building in the open. So I think the thread constantly is that, you know, don't be afraid to build in the open, I would say, right? There is a lot of learning through success or failures or through pivots. And the more, you know, you are out there and the more you are able to, you know, speak about what you are going through, that vulnerability in a way helps others help you better and definitely helps inspire and helps you grow into a much better product, into a much better business, right? So yeah, that's my learning at least.
That's awesome. And, you know, once again, thanks a lot.
Thank you so much, Sunil. And talk to you soon.